Welcome to the debut episode of The Chase Down, part of the Almighty Ballin Podcast Network. I'm Justin Rowan with my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Just got engaged this weekend, so I'm doing good. I'm significantly poorer than I once was. A little under the weather. My body sort of collapsed in the wake of a weekend in Athens, Ohio, as it often does for anyone who went to Ohio U. But I'm good. I'm good. Feeling great.
I'm amazed that we're like 20 seconds into the podcast and you've already made it about yourself.
I'm very... Like, it's going to be a long history of... We're both pretty selfish people, to be honest. So,
oh, without a doubt.
This is primarily going to be the two of us waiting for the other one to finish talking so we can make our own points.
Oh, exactly. There's nothing both of us love more than listening to our own voices, so this sure. Should be good. But at least our own voices will be talking about the Cavaliers, which hopefully will interest people. We'll obviously be posting this up on Twitter. So if you guys love the show, if you have some feedback, we're always open to that.
If you more than likely don't love the show, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, because our egos are pretty fragile here, but we'll try to make it work. We're going to start things off, though, talking about the Cavs road trip that they are currently on. They've split the first two games. There was the massacre against the Clippers with the big three resting, and then the shootout between Kyrie Irving and D'Angelo Russell with the Lakers game. It was fun. From a fan's perspective, but obviously the concerns right now when you watch the team play come on the defensive side of the floor. Is it something that you are concerned about, Carter, or do you think that they can just flip the switch and everything's going to be all right?
I think they can flip the switch because really, like, personnel-wise, they're not that different, like, for when it matters. They didn't really flip the switch last year until the conference finals. Like, the Pistons scored pretty well on them, and the Hawks scored pretty well on them. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know. Like, it's not like... So, who has this team really lost? It's just Mozgov and Dele. And those guys didn't really play that much in the playoffs at all. So, the same core group of guys is back. I mean, they're all a year older. So, you know, someone like Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye might be a little worse, but... Darren Williams has proven to be a fairly effective point guard defender. Not super fleet of foot, but he's a big body.
He at least knows what he's doing, and he'll be in position.
Yeah, he knows where to be. And then JR is back, and he's really showing his value. Jump shot has completely abandoned him pretty much all season when he's been healthy, but he showed his value defensively in terms of not being Shumpert, who has kind of been all over the place. So I guess, like, you know, all you can really say is they will. I mean, the fact that they're dead last in transition points allowed on a points per possession basis tells you something about the effort level. Like, these guys are just coasting. I think it was a friend of the pod, Daniel Rowell, who said, like, stop using advanced analytics to fuel your takes about a team that is actively indifferent to this part of the season.
I guess my only counter to this, like, for the most part, I'm 100% with you. I think this team has shown that it does have a switch that can be flipped. Most LeBron teams do. We see Kyrie Irving, even though he doesn't play great defense when it matters, he at least plays about break-even or passable defense. My concern is just because this team hasn't had a lot of time together as a full roster, that some of the continuity and the communication that they would have had in place from the regular season isn't going to be there. They don't know. Kevin Love isn't going to know where Darren Williams is going to be. And I think that kind of those mistakes and those missed opportunities are going to take a little more time to flip the switch. Like, I agree that the Cavs really did flip a switch in the conference finals against the Raptors. But I think there was a higher level of effort leading up to that. And some of their playoffs, even though they swept the first two rounds, there was an adjustment period and it wasn't an instantaneous thing. Like, I think they kind of had to troubleshoot a few things before they really ended up taking that next step and finding another gear against the Warriors.
Yeah, well, you know what's kind of funny is, like, You know, and this is really just now occurring to me, like, the continuity stuff isn't as bad as it seems, because they kind of scrap their whole defense anyway when they go to play the Warriors. Yeah, they completely for sure. change what they do. And that's, I really thought that was a big part of why the Warriors jumped out to that 3-1 lead, is because the Cavs learned an entirely new defensive system on the fly, which is, against the Warriors, not the best time to be putting those training wheels on.
Yeah, and I guess part of it, too, was also with the coaching change. Tyronn Lue had new things he wanted to implement that he didn't have a training camp. It's going to be interesting to see how easy this process is for the Cavs. And it kind of really depends on who they face, too, which part of people being concerned about the seeding of the Cavaliers and whether or not Boston overtakes them, like, personally, I'm not too concerned about whether or not they get the number one seed or if they fall down to two. I care more about who the potential matchups are. Yeah. Like, if you look at the East right now, the Milwaukee Bucks are in seventh. I would hate to fall to number two and play Milwaukee, not because I think there's a chance at a real upset there, but they're going to make things a lot tougher than they need to be. They play a style and they have personnel that really does give the Cavs some troubles. And I just think it would be an unnecessary headache. On the flip side, you have Toronto, who's currently in the fourth, and if they get Kyle Lowry in and he returns from having the loose bodies removed from his hand as seamlessly as Love returned from having the loose bodies removed from his knee, they could be really dangerous. Since the All-Star break, they have one of the best defenses in the league and one of the best net ratings, and that's without their best player. The additions of Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker are going to make things more difficult against them, so I wouldn't really want to play them in the second round.
But you don't really want to play the Wizards or even the Celtics, really. I know we like to trash the Celtics on among each other, but like, they're going to just make you work. They're going to be uber physical. Like, I just want to, like, I want the road of least physical resistance.
Like, you and me both, but
yeah, guys who aren't just going to beat the crap out of them.
See, in a potential matchup, I respect the Wizards, what they can do more than the Celtics.
I agree. Because
I think the Celtics, a lot of what they do in the regular season is based on more effort and trying. And I think once you start to scheme, we've seen it at least in the past that Isaiah Thomas has struggled to score with the same efficiency in the playoffs. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case with Al Horford helping facilitate the offense. But when the game slows down, the Cavs pay more attention to each possession. They're not giving up as many transition opportunities. You got Tristan Thompson creating all those extra possessions. I just don't really see Boston as being a team that's going to give them a lot of trouble.
It's a tough matchup for them because they can't keep people off the boards. And with Love and Thompson, the Cavs are brutal to stop on the offensive boards.
Right.
Plus, a fully engaged LeBron in that area. And then the Cavs are really, really good at finding mismatches and then abusing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at what they did to poor Steph Curry last year, as an example. And, like, the Cavs will just run Isaiah Thomas through action after action after action. It's going to feel like bullying.
Right.
The Celtics barely survived defensively with him on the floor in the first place. So if the Cavs can consistently get him switched onto LeBron James, which they've been able to do,
right,
to at least other guards, because switching is a big part of how you bother the Cavs. Because if you don't, their shooters kill you.
Right, that's what we saw against the Rockets. Once the Rockets started switching on defense. Granted, the Cavs were also tired and shorthanded, but once they started switching, that's when you started to be... You'd see that the Cavs actually had to work for their offensive possessions, and that's when the tired legs really kicked into effect.
Yeah, it's a pick-your-poison thing, because if you switch on them and it's the playoffs, Kyrie and LeBron are just going to kill you. Yeah. But if you have enough good defensive personnel to at least bother them in those isolations on the switches... Then you can conceivably control them. But if you try to play Hawks-style defense, where you collapse and help and rotate, they're too good. They have too many good passers and they have too many good shooters, and they're just going to kill you. And the Celtics are not constructed to switch with with someone like Amir Johnson on the floor or Isaiah Thomas on the floor or Kelly Olynyk on the floor, these guys are just going to get shredded. So they have these bulldogs that make you think, okay, like they have Crowder, they have Bradley, they have Smart, but the Cavs won't attack those guys, not if they're smart. if they're smart, Avery they're
Bradley does really impress me defensively, and like
he's amazing.
Bradley and Smart, like the two of them, are just fantastic defensively. But
you can't play them together unless you want to put Thomas on the bench, and then exactly, he goes back to the where do you get your scoring?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering this earlier, and I'm curious what you think about it. When I was looking at the standings, what do you think if it all plays out as it currently stands now? Milwaukee versus Boston round one. Like, I just think the length that Milwaukee has and just, I mean, they have the best player in that series. I know Isaiah Thomas is probably having the best season, but when you look at both sides of the floor, I think Giannis Antetokounmpo is a top three player in the East this year. Like, yeah. To me, it's LeBron, Butler, and Giannis in some order.
Yeah, and it feels like length is the way you kill Isaiah. It's not speed. He's going to be faster than you, but if you've got arms and you can bother him, you can get into his airspace and make him take really weird angles. And once again, there's no great way to kill Isaiah and stop him from scoring on you, but the Bucks with their switchability.
I mean, they could theoretically throw Chris Middleton on him, and Middleton has shown he can guard point guards in the past.
Yeah, Middleton's awesome. Snell is not a horrible defender.
No, he's not.
Giannis can play well if he's locked in. Henson's a good weak side rim protector. They've Brogdon. Brogdon looks really cagey, and then they got Dele for bench units. Like, they have guys to throw at people. Dele
might break his knee.
Yeah. No kidding.
It's going to be really interesting, because I really think even though the finale kind of feels predetermined, although the Durant injury kind of throws a wrench into that, I really feel like there's potential for upsets in both conferences when you look at potential matchups. Like, I think Milwaukee could give Boston trouble. I think I don't know what the hell the Pacers can do, but there's teams in the East that I could see giving Washington trouble, that could give Toronto trouble, that could give Boston trouble, or that could be annoying to the Cavs. So I think that there's a lot of intrigue still left for this season.
Yeah, I do too. I think the seedings are really going to be interesting here because, I mean, if you look at it, these top East teams especially aren't special. The best point differential of the three are the Raptors at plus 3.8.
Carter, everybody's special in their own way.
Oh, there you go. But I mean, like, they're not unbelievable teams, and they're teams with plus 2.5 point differentials can lose first round playoff series. You know, like, it's not unfathomable. And I think the Heat will likely end up in that 8 spot. I think because the Pistons' schedule down the stretch is pretty tough. I think they're going to annoy the Cavs even. They're not a bad team either.
Miami, they lost Dion, man. Can they win without Dion?
Who's to say? I'm not here to tell anyone that Dion Waiters is irreplaceable.
I think everybody knows that you can't truly replace Dion, but Goran Dragic has quietly like just been amazing this year.
He's so good as long as he's your lead ball handler. I just don't think he has much interest in being complimentary.
That's the whole Miami thing. Like, they have guys that play well in their role, but they wouldn't be justified in having that role on a contending team. Like, that was always the thing with Dion. Like, he played great down the stretch in the final year before LeBron came, but once he had to play a complementary role either with the Cavs or the Thunder, he didn't really excel. With Miami, after Justice Winslow goes down and all of a sudden they need to take him to take up all these possessions and all this usage, that's when he starts playing at least passable.
Yeah, I mean, and those teams are hard to beat because they make sense. Teams that make sense are hard. like everything that they do, everyone is in their perfect spot on that team. They're just not quite talented enough to be a contender. And yeah, those teams like much. Make you work hard. And the Cavs don't always like working hard. So I don't think the Heat can beat the Cavs. But the Celtics, I think they're absolutely vulnerable. The Wizards, if they have one of their weird wizard stretches where they're not as good as they should be, they're certainly vulnerable. And the Raptors seem like they're scary, but they're also a ticking time bomb with that three-point shooting. Like, that team, when they go cold, they go profoundly cold.
Yeah, the one thing that the Raptors really struggle with is defending the three-point line. Like, even though that they added Serge Ibaka, and I think that's going to help because, I mean, in past matchups, if Pascal Siakam or Luis Scola is defending Kevin Love, you're going to give up some wide-open shots. And that's why they've been killed by guys like Love and Channing Frye on the Cavs, because their bigs just don't have that mobility. It's going to be interesting. Like, PJ Tucker is shooting out of his mind right now. I don't know if that's necessarily going to last. They lost.
It won't.
you never know. The NBA is weird. Norman Powell is shooting poorly compared to how he did last season. They lost some reliable three-point shooting in Terrence Ross. Serge Ibaka is shooting out of his mind, but he's a bit more of an average three-point shooter. So it really does come down to how Kyle Lowry plays, but Kyle Lowry just had surgery on his shooting hand, so you never know how that's going to affect him when he gets back.
Yeah, I think a big part that people don't really remember is that there's just such a huge difference between functional three-point shooting and good three-point shooting. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the Raptors, what they have is functional three-point shooting. Guys who, if you leave them wide open, they're going to bang home a decent amount of threes. But nobody really gets left wide open in the playoffs, for the most part.
Right.
Teams close out really hard, and you have to get your shot up quickly and with people in your airspace. That's something that the Cavs are really, really loaded with, is they have people like Korver and JR, if he ever remembers how to shoot again, and Fry and Love, guys who will just fire off shots. With very little hesitation and make them at an acceptable rate.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden LeBron's a 40% three-point shooter.
Yeah, and LeBron, no kidding. But like the Raptors don't have a lot of dead eyes, and this is something I wrote about even pretty recently for the Step Back about the Warriors, is that all their role players, even the ones that can shoot for the most part, they're not excited to shoot.
Right.
Like, if you leave them with 30 feet of room, they'll take it, but they're not really, that's not what they want to do.
And especially in the playoffs when offenses do bog down to some extent and teams have scouted out what your pet plays are and things like that, you need guys that can create a shot. And that, to me, has always been one of the biggest issues with Toronto is they really only have three ball handlers, if you're counting Corey Joseph. And Corey Joseph is a little bit on the passive side offensively, we'll call it that. I mean, he takes about 1 3 a game, and he shoots it at a decent rate, but he's not going to break anyone down and create a shot for himself. So if you throw a length on Kyle Lowry, who initiates so much of the offense for Toronto, you have a lot of guys that are just kind of standing around waiting for the ball, because typically what they get is drive and kick shots. But if those aren't available, all of a sudden the plays that Toronto starts running just all fall apart.
Yeah, I just think that they're just one of these teams where they could be in more trouble than their point differential looks like if Kyle Lowry or DeMar DeRozan have tough stretches. I mean,
right.
Once again, this is a team that had their most successful year in franchise history last year, going to the conference finals, winning two games, but oh yeah, they also almost lost in the first round to a not that good Pacers team.
Yep.
And Dwayne Casey was talking about how nobody believed in them as a two seed. So like this team, I just think they really still have to prove it to me. Like, and then really the Heat gave them trouble when the Heat were playing Justice Winslow at center. Like,
to be fair, Valanciunas was also down.
Yeah, Valanciunas was also out, but the Heat were much more banged up. I really think that.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
This team just kind of has to prove it. And I don't like to... I'm not hating on them, and I think that playoff samples are really messy, And I don't really like the narrative that they just suck in the playoffs, because I don't really think that's true.
And one big part of that has been that Kyle Lowry has been banged up going into the last three playoffs. Like, he had a hip injury last year, I think. I forget what the deal was the year before, but he's always banged up because he gives 120% in the regular season and takes charges up 40. Like, I guess that's the flip side of what the Cavs
do. And part of that is being on a team like the Raptors that doesn't really have the luxury of, like, not trying very often.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, for the most part, you got to work if you're not the Cavs, like, or the Warriors or the Spurs. Like, not everyone has the luxury to rest. But yeah, I just think that in general, I think all these teams should pose a vague threat. But because of that seeding, really, it's the first round stuff that matters more to me from a seeding perspective. I'm confident the Cavs will get to the finals this year pretty much no matter what their road is, but you just want the road of least resistance.
One interesting thing that probably is going to dictate whether or not the Cavs do lock up that first seed is they have four back-to-backs remaining. And not that that's necessarily a huge concern, like they don't play a lot of top teams, but they might rest guys.
That has not been a problem in whether they lose back-to-back games. That is not relevant. They just lose them.
Yeah, that's true. But they might just rest guys. Like, they might just give LeBron, Kyrie, Love the night off once again. And it'll be interesting because they have to balance rest as well as trying to develop that continuity and get that back. Like, they need to have games where the big three plays with Deron Williams, with Kyle Korver, with Derek Williams. Like, they all need to get some minutes under their belt if they're going to execute at a high level in the playoffs, in my opinion.
Well, where do you land on that spectrum, though? Because it's kind of been vexing me for a while. I'm kind of okay with just playing as you would, like, heavy minute rotation for most of the rest of the year, where, like, you're really experimenting and you're trying stuff out.
Yep.
And then still, and instead of cutting down LeBron's minutes to, like, 33, still play him as 38, get him his reps with the lineups that he needs to get used to.
Yeah.
And then still rest him games.
No, that's kind of where I fall on the spectrum as well. Like, I'd rather have him play those minutes and rest on back-to-backs. Because, I mean, effectively, if you look at it, if he weren't to rest at all this season and just play 34 minutes a game, he'd effectively play the same amount of minutes. And I think 34 minutes one night and 34 minutes the next is probably tougher on the body than if he was to play 38 one night and then rest on the second night. And I think people look too much into the minutes per game rather than the total load that he's been shouldering. And
yeah, I've been monitoring that quite a bit, actually, his total minutes played as compared to the rest of the season of the year. He's currently second in the league in minutes per game and functionally first because Kyle Lowry's been out.
Right.
But he's down, I think he's at 11th right now in total minutes played.
Yeah, he was around 11th or 12th last time I looked.
Which is a lot easier to stomach. It just is. Like, and I don't, and I'm with you. I don't get why the minutes per game is such a, everyone tends to agree that it's the amount of games. Like, when people discuss, like, the wear and tear of the regular season, they say it's that there's 82 games. It's not that there's 48 minutes, it's that there's 82 games.
Right.
There's just too many games.
And that's why they're starting next season a little earlier, so that there's limited amounts of back-to-backs.
Yeah. So, when we discuss workload, it feels to me like we're just using what's convenient for an argument.
Hang on. Are you saying that people pick and choose what stats they use depending on what narrative they want to push?
Yes, I would argue that. It's like if we're really so worried about LeBron's workload, it should absolutely be total minutes played.
Right.
It just should. And so I would like him to be around 30th in minutes played, but as it stands, to paint him as when he's going to sit six or seven games this year just for rest, it seems a little disingenuous to focus on the minutes per game total.
Right. I'm completely with you. I think LeBron, the other part of this is that he puts so much into monitoring his body, making sure that he is recovering. I mean, Brian Windhorst, on the last episode of Hey Wendy, he talked about how at his house he has more equipment for rest and recovery than some NBA teams do, and more than any college team does. Like, this guy, he goes into the deep freeze. He's doing all this weird stuff that kind of still makes me a little suspicious that he's actually the Terminator. But he pays more money than anybody else to have people that monitor his nutrition, that help him with rest and recovery, that get him through all these elaborate pregame workouts that he goes through to make sure that his body is prepared, which is why... Yeah, he complains if he's not getting at least 34 minutes, because it's a waste how much work he puts into his routine if he's not playing those minutes.
So it's good to rest him, man. Yeah, I think the real key is just finding ways to get him that rest while still getting him important minutes for continuity's sake with lineups, because the Cavs, it's just starting to become a fairly, like, it seems to be a reality that they're going to be coming into the playoffs running five-man units that have had less than 100 minutes together.
Yeah. that seems and that basically sucks. Inevitable.
Yeah, like, it just sucks because they're going to need to learn on the fly, and luckily they're talented enough to play around a little bit more than you'd think.
Yeah, and also the bottom rounds of the East is weaker. Like, part of why I think Milwaukee can be disruptive to the Cavs is that if they aren't 100% aware of what they need to be executing on offense and what everybody's doing, that's a team that's going to make you pay for any mistakes that you make. They really get out in transition and they can be disruptive offensively. If the Cavs have a think full they're season than together, record. I'm not going to be as concerned, right?
I just think a big part of it, it's continuity and stuff like that, and the Bucks are so disruptive in passing lanes and taking advantage of miscommunications. Like, how many times if you see two guys go to run out and cover a shooter, Giannis just storms into the middle of the lane for like an easy dunk, like a double pump yam, and it's like so disheartening. And then I just think they're better than their record.
They are.
Like, Chris Middleton's better than Jabari Parker. So it's like they upgraded their roster mid-season, even though it felt like a bummer.
Right. I mean, if Chris Middleton played all year, like, Middleton was their best player last season. Giannis has clearly passed him this year. Not just because of the injury, but he's playing at a higher peak level than Middleton has ever played at. But I think Middleton gets kind of glossed over when we talk about best shooting guards in the game. Like, he was one of the best isolation scorers in the league last year, a fantastic defender and a great three-point shooter. Like, he's not just a 3-and-D guy. I know that's kind of his bread and butter, but he's a dynamic scorer too that gets it done on both ends.
Yeah, I don't want really any part of them. I think they'll really bother the Cavs. And we've said this in G-Chat. Giannis thinks he's as good as LeBron James.
Yeah.
When they play each other, like, no, he's not. And I'm sure deep down he knows that. But when they play each other, the way he carries himself is brash. It's probably why LeBron doesn't like him. He is annoyed by how hard they play against them.
No, that's when you're young and confident, man, like, that's dangerous. Like,
I don't want to see someone who thinks they can beat the Cavs. As a fan, I'm saying, give me someone who just thinks they're lambs being led to slaughter and they're going to try their best until they get punched in the mouth. Mm-hmm.
Or Toronto, who thinks it's all a big conspiracy against them.
No, that's just their fan base, Justin.
No, it's the coaching staff. It's everybody. It's why they have a mental breakdown over any bad call and the team just falls apart.
Conspiracy theories are hard, man.
But not as that we'd know anything about conspiracy theories as a Cavs fan, right?
Nope.
No.
Earth is flat.
It's a very rational fan base.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
All right, sure. So moving on just a little bit, going back to the current road trip, the Cavs have a couple days off in Denver. I'm sure they're going to enjoy that to very
Thank degrees. God Larry Sanders isn't with the team.
If Larry Sanders was in Denver with Kyrie, JR, and Love right now, that could get interesting. And we would have...
Could be tough.
I think Kyrie might write an entire novel on why the Earth is flat.
Oh, my God. Just about opening your perceptions and and challenging yourself to see things in new ways, man.
I like it. I like that this team is weird. Because like,
they are dorks, man.
And Richard Jefferson too, like his whole mic'd up thing in the Clippers game was one of the funniest things I've seen. Like that guy's just so out there, and I love it.
Yeah, they're,
I love
they're that just weirdos. So weird. Yeah, I mean LeBron in on the Road Trip podcast, they literally talked about Pinky and the Brain for like 15 minutes. That's all you need to know. These guys are dorks.
All right.
And I love them.
So let's go to the actual matchup, though, against the Nuggets. Jokic is amazing. Everything just kind of starts there. He reminds me kind of like if Marc Gasol had a baby with Sabonis. And like nice. His passing has just been unbelievable. He's over 6 assists per game the last 2 months. And really, he's just such a dominating force for a guy that isn't a high-volume scorer. He really does create everything for the Nuggets. And I kind of love that they're surrounding him with combo guards and other kind of secondary playmakers. Like, there isn't a guy that dominates the possession. Like, Moutier does, but his role is becoming less and less with the team. But I love having kind of
supplement. In the sense that it doesn't exist.
What's that?
It's becoming less and less in the sense that it doesn't exist.
That's true. But, like, I like Gary Harris. I like Jamal Murray.
We know.
I was just about to say, no part of that has to do with my Canadian bias. But, like, these are guys that can score, that can create for themselves and others. And Will Barton's Jokic just makes everything work.
Will Barton's another good example of that, too. Like, slashy, cutty guys that can... That, you know, can be secondary creators around this hub in the high post in Jokic. The thing about I think I have this theory. I think that Denver is the best league pass watch team this year.
They've been up there for
because
me.
Because they don't ever get national games because no one cares about them yet. So they're always available. Because I always think people are like, oh, the Warriors are the best league pass team. Yeah, if you want to watch 20 of their games. It's got to be a team that's not getting on a ton of national games.
That's a good point.
And then they have, I think since the All-Star break, like at least this is like a couple weeks ago, like since the All-Star break, they had the number one offense and the number 30 defense.
So you know it's going to be an entertaining game.
They play this just beautiful passing, cutting, ball movement offense. And then on the other end, whoever is playing against them is just having the best night of the year.
So against the Cavs, it's going to be a 140-130 game.
Should be, and it'll be fun. Like, because the Cavs aren't going to try that hard to stop them, and they kill you if you don't try, if you're not sharp. Yeah, they don't really have any. They don't really have any good defenders. It's just a personnel issue for them. And
yeah, that's
true. They don't. They're just going to be fun to watch as a result for the rest of the season. So I think we're in for a fun shootout.
Yeah, plus they're so young. Like, young guys have absolutely no idea what they're doing defensively. Like, they can play good individual defense, and I think we see that in Minnesota. Like, Andrew Wiggins will play good on-ball defense, but his net impact on defense is terrible. Like, it's one of the worst in the league at his position because he just doesn't know where he needs to be. Like,
because he is a child.
Yeah, even Tristan Thompson, like, he was known for his defense, but his impact with the Cavs initially was all on offense. Like, the offense was considerably better when he was on, just because he's a good screen setter, he is a role threat. It wasn't really until, like, the 2015 playoffs that he took a step to becoming, like, a plus defender consistently, and has just kind of blossomed from there. Like, guys... Especially big men and centers, they don't learn defense until they're like 24, 25, because there's so much you have to know. You have to be kind of the quarterback there, or I guess the linebacker, communicating for everybody, calling out what the other teams are running. And when you have someone like Jokic who does that essentially on offense, it's going to take him some time before he becomes an effective team defender, if he does become that at all.
Yeah, they got to put him in front of Grizzlies tape and just have him watch Marc Gasol play defense. Because Gasol isn't particularly fleet of foot either. But he's all positioning and knowledge and hip bumps and dirty little, you know, not dirty, but like little things just to muck up offensive flow. Like, that's what Marc Gasol's really good at.
Right. Yeah. He's going to jam the cutter. He's going to make his presence felt at all times.
Yeah. Because Jokic is never going to be flying around blocking shots like a maniac. He's just not a quick twitch guy like that.
You don't necessarily need to be that. Like,
nope.
I think Marc Gasol is one of the best defensive centers in the league. And you look at someone like Hassan Whiteside, who's a shot blocking machine, but they aren't much better when he's on the court defensively at all. Like, or at least throughout his career, that's been the case.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you have to be smart. And that is something that, you know, it's not like Jokic is like 6'10". He's like a pure 7-footer, right? Like,
yeah.
He has the size to do this. So, yeah, I think the Nuggets are awesome. I think they're so fun to watch. And I kind of hope they hold on to that playoff spot as opposed to seeing the Blazers in there, which I think, you know, Blazers are fine, but the Nuggets are just so fun to watch, and it'd be fun to see them try to learn their way through a playoff series.
I think the most fun kind of first-round matchup there is if the Spurs were to overtake the Warriors, I'd love to see Spurs-Nuggets. Like, I think that would just be a great series.
Yep, and I think we would probably all enjoy watching the Grizzlies just beat the hell out of them for 6 games.
Are you talking about Grizzlies-Warriors?
Yeah.
Man, honestly,
that would just be a slugfest of like just physicality, and Warriors would be sore after every game.
And it's funny too, because the other possibility, I mean, the Grizzlies are only half game back of the Thunder. The Thunder and Warriors very well could meet up in the first round, but that would just be the most nauseating series ever.
Yeah.
Because, like,
hell, at this point, the Clippers and the Warriors could meet up.
Oh, God. Could you imagine going from... Yeah, they could, but worst
game... They're a game back... The Grizzlies are a game back of the 5 seed. Oh,
man. What would be nauseating if somehow... It won't happen, but if the Warriors played the Thunder and then the Clippers. Like, if the Clippers, like, upset the Rockets or something.
That'd be a lot. That'd be a lot.
Like, the Warriors are just... They're just so corny, and they just complain so much. And, like, I honestly don't even dislike the Warriors that much. Like, I'm just kind of over it after the finals. Like, okay, we got the one championship. They're corny. They're good, but, like... They are.
It's easier to not be annoyed when they don't also represent a threat for a ringless LeBron era in Cleveland.
Right. Exactly. So, like, now I'm able to get over it a little bit. I'm able to transition to at least appreciating some of the quirks in that. But man, they're corny, and they just complain so much about the dumbest things.
They just cannot fathom that why people might not like them much. It is jarring how uncomfortable they are with being hated. I think they really thought, in their heart of hearts, that everyone was going to be like, we get it, we love it. Not even just we get it, but like, hey, why don't you appreciate us a little more?
Hey, this is great, that 73 win team added the second best player in the league.
The rest of the league and all of its fans are just going to love that for a league that fairly or unfairly gets dinged for its lack of parity all the time in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. Like, shocker that people don't really want to see you win every game by 30 points.
It's funny. Ethan Sherwood-Strauss on the recent True Hoop podcast kind of summed it up the best. He's like, the locker room is a weird place because you have a mix of like year one LeBron in Miami, where they're kind of the villains and they don't know how to handle it and they're struggling with their identity. But on the other hand, you also have a team that's been together for a long time and is annoyed with each other for various reasons. Which is kind of year four, Miami.
Yeah. And Justin, I don't know if you recall, did the Miami Heat win the NBA title in their first or last year together?
I don't believe they did.
Let's just get the best of both worlds then.
Although we're in a post-facts America, or you are at least, so did win in those years.
You're up with that dreamboat Justin Trudeau.
He's a good-looking man. I think all Justins are very handsome individuals. I'm not biased at all in that statement.
Let's move on.
No. Let's linger there. Let's marinate in that for a little bit.
I don't want to marinate in anything of your creation.
All right. So just wrapping things up with the Cavs' remaining schedule. So after the Denver game, they play in Charlotte, and then they travel back to Cleveland for Washington for the second half of back-to-back. Do you think they rest everybody for Charlotte, knowing that the Washington game has a little more importance, or do they do what they did in LA, where they rest versus the good team?
I think Lou is all about the Popovich thing, where it's like, just take the easy win.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, rest the guys sense. When it doesn't matter. And for what it's worth, the Hornets aren't an easy win. They're 9 games under 500, but have a plus 0.5 point differential.
They're like,
so they have a point differential of an above 500 team. They just
they're aren't the bizarro winning. Hawks. Like, the Hawks yeah. should not be a playoff team, but they are. Like, they're terrible. I think they have like the 9th best point differential in the East. But man, Charlotte, it's amazing, because I really thought that was kind of a team on the rise, and they still have a very good defense, and Kemba Walker is having a great year. I guess yep, Nick
they just have lost a lot of close games.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. They're outscoring their opponents on the year, and they're 9 games under 500.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Wolves out west. Like, we all made fun of them for being brutal, but I think they're on the plus side of a point differential by now, and they're still 10 games under 500.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have bad luck, or you get, you know, you lose some too many close games for one reason or another. And your record ends up really not reflecting how good you are.
Yeah, that's kind of like Kevin Love's big year in Minnesota. Like, I think they were a top 10 team offensively and defensively in terms of efficiency, and they still missed the playoffs.
Yeah, they went like 41-41 and mm-hmm. missed. It's just sometimes that happens in the NBA, and it sucks.
Yeah,
it's especially true. If you're one of these mid-level teams that their margin for error isn't like what the Cavaliers have. Which sucks
well,
for them.
Well, hopefully we have a little bit of a margin for error. I hope everybody enjoyed listening to the podcast. As I said before, we're now part of the Almighty Ballin Podcast Network. We'll also be in the coming weeks launching on Dash Radio, so you'll be able to hear us both live on there. Well, not necessarily live, but we'll be able to hear a broadcast on Dash Radio on Wednesday mornings. We'll have more information available on our Twitter accounts, but you'll also be able to listen to us in podcast form. Make sure you do subscribe wherever you can, whether that be on SoundCloud or iTunes. We'll have that information available, and download the Dash Radio app so you can listen to us there. So thank you very much, you guys, for listening. Be sure to hit us up with feedback, and as always, go Cavs.